Hello and welcome to another episode of the Villa Talks podcast. Welcome to another episode of the Pre-Match Social. We're back after, again, another brief hiatus, but back, football's back. Seems like it's been a long time. It was great to go down to Villa Park yesterday and experience a end-to-end game, to put it lightly. So we'll be obviously discussing that and discussing the guys' thoughts. So I've got AJ and Sam with me today. No Carl, I'm afraid. Not idea what he's doing, but he's too busy for us. But we'll get those guys' thoughts on the game yesterday, and then we'll look forward to the Newcastle game as well. But probably no real news stories this week, so we won't do from the stands of Villa Park unless the guys want to talk about Leon Bailey's clothing brand or Ezri Konsa's NFT, which I think we just discussed off air. It's not something that we're that bothered about. But before we start, AJ, Sam, boys, how are you?
I'm all right, thanks, mate. Yeah, I'm pretty good. Pretty good. Bit of a frustrating one yesterday, but I'm sure we'll talk about that in a minute. Some flashes of brilliance, but yeah, overall, a fairly frustrating performance, wasn't it? But in terms of my own personal well-being, pretty good.
Good. That's what we care about, mate.
Oh, thanks.
My half term starts tomorrow, so.
Oh, nice.
I'm feeling pretty chipper.
We've got another week here in Leamington before the kids are off. So,
yeah, but Sam's teaches at a fancy school, doesn't he? They get about four weeks off for half term, probably.
Yeah. So 6 weeks off for half term.
So they can go skiing.
Yeah.
Right, let's push on then. So, well, let's go straight on to Hero and Villain of the Week. So, Sam, you're stepping up to the plate, mate. Can you feel Carl's shadow? Can you do it? Have you got it in you?
Well, I'm not sure I'm going to be a sweary, that's for sure. But look, I think that there were some good performances in the game yesterday, of course, despite the result. And firstly, I think, you know, you've got to talk about Philippe Coutinho. I don't know about you guys, but I've had that chant in my head all day. I'm walking around school and I'm just going da 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 da. Can't help myself.
I'm gonna use that. That's gonna be the opening theme that is for this episode.
It's top notch, isn't it? It's really excellent. I've sanitized it a little bit so that I can sing it with my kids. So instead of he's effing magic, he's football magic, and they're getting involved now. It's brilliant. It's fun for all the family. It's a great chant.
Can you sing it? Sing the radio edit for us.
Oh, so yeah. So this, the way I would do it is: he went to Barca, he won the league in Spain. He went to Munich and did the same again. He's football magic, and baby, don't you know? His name's Philippe Coutinho. Da, 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 da. I think that's all right.
That was a great rendition, mate. Sorry, very good. Very good. Yeah.
Cheers,
can I just? I do love the chant, but the pedant in me does have a small problem with it, in the sense that. When he went to Munich, he can't have done the same again because we're saying he won the league in Spain. Yeah, and you could go, he went to Munich and won the league again, and it still works, and it's accurate. So,
I'll let the upper Holt know next time.
Yeah,
guys, can we quiet down a little bit, please? Just one little thing, please.
Yeah.
AJ's just mentioned. Can we just change the lyrics
I just, you know, if there wasn't a version that scanned that was syntactically accurate, then I'd be okay with it. But there is, as I've just shown, so we're just letting ourselves down there because he didn't win the league in Spain again when he was at Munich because you can't do that. So, anyway.
If there was ever a buzzkill...
That's my role on the pod, I feel, isn't it, generally, and in life, so...
We still got Villain of the Week left.
I could have made a late bid to be Villain of the Week there, couldn't I? But anyway, sorry, mate.
Let's just talk about how brilliant he was. I mean, you know, he's doing little back heel turns through the fullback's legs. He just glides over the pitch, doesn't he? You know, his vision is unbelievable. But obviously, that pass that he played through for Ramsey's goal. It's the sort of ball that you see it and you're thinking, you know, for the past 5 years, you see it, it's on, but you're thinking, nah, no one in our team's ever going to have the ability to thread that with the right weight. Any other player in the side, Meslier's gobbling it up or the centre-half's cutting it out.
Buendia maybe could have played it, to be fair.
Yeah, but Maybe, yeah. But yeah, I think those two are they've just got that ability to put the weight on the pass, thread the ball through. It was just beautiful. I think you lads were just saying what a pass, and I just quite a few people texted me at that moment, and I just texted back, I'm sobbing. You know, I was just an emotional wreck. It's like, how have we got a bloke this good in our midfield?
Crazy, it's isn't ridiculous. It? Yeah, and Bendia and McGinn both tried that pass earlier on in the game, and didn't manage to do it. Although I agree. You know, Bendia's done it a fair few times already this season, and he's definitely got it in his locker. But what a goal! I don't know about you guys, but I mean, obviously, I was there, so you know, you tend to see a little bit more from what you can see on TV. But that sort of ball into Coutinho, into the number 10, and a turn was on every time because Leeds man
and Buendia again, to be fair, sorry, I'll keep and Buendia, up and up. Yeah. But I think those two in that 10 role, you know, well, who knows if Buendia's going to be fit on Saturday. I assume Coutinho
Sunday, he's got Sunday, I think it is.
Sorry,
he's got
Sunday.
Next day. It's got another day.
Coutinho only brought him off as a precaution. I think he'll be okay, but Buendia looked a little bit worse, didn't he? But those two in that 10 role, is such an exciting prospect in there. And there was a clear plan in the game for McGinn to try and get it into them early and expose Leeds' man marking. And in the first half, I think that was working reasonably well. I thought we started not great. I mean, obviously we conceded early, but even before that, we'd had a couple of corners and looked a bit threatening from those, but I didn't think we started well. But then, you know, after that, obviously in the first half we played well, and key in that were both Coutinho and Buendia, and to an extent McGinn in terms of supplying them as well. And I actually thought Ramsey, obviously his two goals were brilliantly taken, and for that reason very much a contender for Hero of the Week for me. I mean, I tweeted earlier the Top Gun reference for that first goal, where just such intelligent play for a 20-year-old, where yes, the through ball was brilliant, but he's got Klitsch bearing down on him and he just puts the brakes on a la Maverick and lets Klitsch fly right past him, and then just composed finish in the bottom corner. Really, really good finish. And the second finish as well. The run for Watkins was key. Actually, for both of Ramsey's goals, Watkins' run was really important in terms of taking players away, but particularly for the second goal. But still, he had a lot to do from there, you know, and he just pinged it top corner. Beautiful, beautiful finish. For that reason, I think, you know, I think Carl said, to be fair, he would have picked Ramsey as his Hero of the Week. But you're the standard, Sam, so you get to pick, mate. But a pitch for Ramsey. I did actually think in the rest of the game he was a little bit quiet. He wasn't that involved. Our midfield in general, McGinn was in it a bit more, but Louise was poor. And I thought, apart from his two goals, Ramsey wasn't as involved as I like to see him. But you can't really criticise him when he's scored two great goals like that, can you? So it'd be churlish of me to complain too much about him being a bit anonymous for the rest of the game. But two great goals, and particularly the first one, just the presence of mind to take those two little shuffly steps so that Klitsch just went straight by him and then just ping it in the corner. Like, really good, like, proper, so the sort of finishing you used to see from like a Michael Owen or someone like that, you know, really, really quality stuff.
It's very good. I love that Top Gun reference. So just imagine Jacob going, I'll hit the brakes, he'll fly right by. And then Philippe will go, you're going to do what, Jacob? It'll be top notch. But no, look, there's no one else this week apart from Jacob Ramsey. I've tweeted it myself. He really does remind me of a young Frank Lampard, but obviously slightly less rotund and with a lot more pace. It's that he arrives late in the box. He's got a shot on him. He's up and down. I do agree that actually I think we'd like to see him on the ball a bit more. Maybe I think he can drift out the game. But he's 20. That's going to come. You know, he'll start to take on a bit more responsibilities as he ages. Just like Grealish did. Grealish wasn't grabbing games by the scruff of the neck age 20. Far from it. So yeah, Hero of the Week for me is Jacob Ramsey. You know, a young, great bar, thin, pacey Frank Lampard.
Oh, I thought you were giving it to Coutinho.
Yeah, I did as well.
No, that was all just preamble.
And sorry, I've ruined it again. I thought you'd given it to continue, and I was just making a case for an alternative, but no.
Not at all. I did say an honourable mention to Coutinho. You must have missed that, but that's fine. I agree. I think, look, Ramsey was top notch. Two great finishes. He's getting better and better. He's a local lad, and we all love to see that. So hopefully, like I said, he's going to score as many goals in claret and blue as Lampard.
But I think for the Blues, I think that's the thing with Ramsey. I think he's not the type of player who's going to play possession intricate football. He's the type of player who's going to drive with the ball. He's going to make things happen. He's going to score goals, arrive late in the box. He's going to make tackles, interceptions. He's that type of player. Maybe he'll, as he develops with age, he'll become a bit more cute with the ball. Mm. But you know, that's not what he's in the team for. And you're right, AJ. I thought the same. You know, I remember just sort of looking over to Chazzy after the first sort of 10-15 minutes and saying, you know, Ramsey's not in this game. He's not. You know, I thought this would be this perfect kind of game for him. He would be able to mix it up a little bit and, you know, impose himself physically, and he wasn't really in it. But it shows you the measure of the kid to come up, you know, make that run. And as you say, reminded me a bit like the McGinn goals. Remember against Spurs when we first went up, when he, was it Danny Rose who just went, I can't remember, was it Danny Rose? Or, I can't remember who it was. We just went flying past him.
Against Norwich, Omar, if you remember, first 20 minutes against Norwich, we said, oh, Ramsey's done nothing. He's not in this.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And then he scores that wonder goal, you know, and he really can carry the ball well, can't he?
Yeah, yeah. He did it earlier in that game. Yesterday he did it earlier, right at the beginning, where he just ran and ran and ran. And you know, Leeds players are full of pace. You know, all their players are quick pretty much, and that's why they do so well. And they couldn't keep near him. So, and the second goal as well, I think, again, we were talking about it at the time, was like 9.9 times out of 10, most players try and drill that back across the goal, or drill it along the floor and it hits the keeper's legs or whatever. Not many players will be trying to side foot it, top bins from there. You know, it's again, the composure for such a young kid. And that is it for me. Like, last year, I remember we were talking about Ramsey. I like the way he doesn't hide. I like the way he's always willing and he's always trying to do something with the ball. But I always said the most important thing for someone like him will be end product. That's what, you know, you see many players who have got great attributes and physically already, but don't have the end product. And for him to, within the space of 6 months after saying that, or whatever, 8 months, whatever it is, him to start scoring goals, assisting goals, getting involved, obviously helps when you're playing with someone like Coutinho as well, who's putting it on a plate. But yeah, just...
To be fair, I don't think either of them were on a plate, you know. No, especially the second one, he had a lot to do there. But even the first one, you know, we've talked about that move to get rid of Clich, you know, there was a lot to do still to score that goal. He did have 42 touches in the game, which is fourth. So it's not like he was completely anonymous, and he actually had a pass completion rate of 80%, which was pretty much better than any of our other midfield players. Because we were pretty poor on the ball, weren't we? Let's be honest, across the whole game, our overall pass completion rate was only 75%. So, you know, he was above average from that perspective, but not hugely progressive, you know, compared to McGinn. And who McGinn progressed the ball with his passing more than twice as much as Ramsey did, as did Louise. So as poor as Louise was off the ball, I think. You know, I think it's fair to say Ramsey his all-round game wasn't quite there, but those two goals were phenomenal. And he's got 5 goals now this season. And bear in mind, he wasn't a guaranteed starter in the first part of the season. So it's not like he started every single one of our games so far. 5 goals and an assist. So, I think, very, very justified hero of the week, I'd say.
Yeah, totally agree. And in terms of villain of the week, right, I'm going for the third officials who add on the extra time, all right?
Yeah.
Because I'm just getting totally sick of this. We'll watch a game where we're in it right to the end and we're pushing for an equaliser or a winner, and you'll think, I can't, you know, we've had that many stoppages. It's got to be 7. It's got to be 7 minutes. Up goes the third official, 3. And you think, what the hell is going on here? There's been about 3 VARs, four subs, and you're just thinking, this is outrageous. Last night, we were up against it, 10 men, 8. I'm just sick of it. There's an agenda, and I won't hear any different.
Wasn't this topic to go into Room 101, I'm sure it was.
Yeah, probably.
Oh, was it? I don't know.
I think it was.
On Didier Cease.
Didier Cease, yeah.
I mean, I cannot, but eight. I couldn't believe
I mean, to
it.
Be
I've
fair,
never seen eight before.
But eight is probably accurate. Like, I think they usually don't add enough time on. There were quite a few injuries. There was a sending off, you know, all of that takes time, substitutions, etc. 8 minutes is probably what it should be, but you don't normally get it.
Nine times out of ten is six. Six is the maximum always, isn't it?
Yeah, unless someone's literally been stretchered off or the floodlights have failed or something. And I think, Omar, I said this when we did it on Didier Cease, actually. I don't know why we don't just use the system that they use in rugby. Like, just stop the clock. Like, when there's a stoppage, stop the clock, and then you know exactly, everyone knows, and when it gets to 90, that's the end. Can have a hooter that goes off if you want to, just like the rugby. I don't really mind. But it doesn't. It just seems like such a weird system to have the referee arbitrarily deciding how much time to add on. When, let's face it, the refs... I actually thought the ref had a good game, to be honest. He let the game flow. He probably could have got his yellow out for the Leeds players a little bit more than he did. But I thought generally he was trying to let the game go. The first goal, I think, was it? And there's basically two fouls in the build-up, and he let them both go. You know, I think he had a reasonable game in general. But they've got enough on their plate. Like, why not just, like, take it out of their hands completely? And all right, you couldn't do that at grassroots level. You've got to leave it to the ref there. But presumably that's true in rugby as well, and they managed to do it. So I just think when there's a stoppage, stop the clock, and then everyone knows exactly how much time there is. And the other thing, the thing about not letting fans in the ground know how long's left and just stopping it at 90 and not showing them the added time. What's that about?
It would stop time wasting as well. You know, obviously you're going to get, you'll probably start the clock as soon as the throw-in's about to happen or as soon as the goal kick's about to happen, because you wouldn't stop it for that, but... The sort of feigning injuries and that kind of stuff.
Martinez and his phantom injuries. Did you see it last night?
Yeah. Even though I was in a right grump last night, that little bit of shithousery by Emmy at the end did cheer me up a little bit.
I had Chadzie next to me who was going crazy at Martinez because he was like, get it forward, let's try and win the game. He's like, I don't care about a draw, I want to win the game.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter if we finish 14th or 9th, which I sort of saw, I suppose, at that point. But although it did look like from my end, when he did try and kick it or whatever happened. Oh, you know, he tried to catch it, didn't he? It did look like he jarred his knee, so I thought he was actually injured.
But
Watching
it on the telly, you could clearly see he's caught it, and you could tell this to Chadzie as well. He's caught it, he's had a look to see if a quick throw-in's on, seeing it's not, and then he's gone, oh, I'm just going to go down now. The beauty of slow motion, where you could see his whole process, where like, oh no, there's nothing on. Maybe I'll go down and think there's a little injury there. Which, I mean, it'd drive you mad if he was the opposition goalkeeper, wouldn't it? But it's one of those when he plays for you love it.
Yeah, I think that's a good shout, Sam. Third officials, that's not something I thought of, to be honest. And it's obviously we don't really want to be labelling any Villa players as villains of the week. And I was trying to think who else can. To be fair, the Leeds fans were great. I hate saying it, but they were great. And obviously the Leeds players played well. I think for us, if we're not villain of the week, but for players who need to improve, I think our defence was very, very poor. All round, really. I'm including the fullbacks in that as well. The amount of times Cash got caught on the 1-2 on the byline, you know, he was trying to nick the ball so many times, they just played it around him. I lost count. And they're doing it every time, the same move every time in the first half. And obviously, we've had that discussion about Konda and Mings online and on Twitter. It's gone a bit crazy about Mings and Konda. But again, Konda hasn't been the same since NFT gate, has he, really?
Don't release an NFT. Turn your shit. But yeah, I mean, Mings was poor. Errors for two of the three goals, particularly the third goal, of a really poor error. I mean, I think the first one, you know, it was an error, but... It wasn't the worst you'll ever see, and there were other players in position that should have done.
He had a lot to do to play it through the legs of
exactly. You know, so, but it still was an error from Mings. But I don't think you could say that led directly to the goal, and there weren't other people who could have made a better fist of that to prevent that from going in as well. And it was a very good finish from Dan James as well. Also, the one the second goal, the Dan James one. A lot of people blaming Mings for that. He got his feet a little bit wrong, but again, the way it's looped over him, you know, when you look at Dan James versus Tyrone Mings as a matchup to win the ball in the air, obviously it looks bad for Mings, but it looped over him in such a way that it was difficult to deal with. But that goal, when we conceded it, was really poor, because we should have been managing the game better and going in at half time 3-1 up, and it would have been a totally different game if that had happened, in my opinion.
That back heel, though, the back heel was a moment of magic, wasn't it? It was lovely,
but if you look at the build up to that goal, previous, a little bit before the goal came about, Matty Cash had the ball in the right back position, and he's tried to play a direct ball down the touchline, and we'd been trying to do that all game to catch Leeds out because of the way they play, and it had worked. But at that point in the game, it would have been much more sensible to just keep the ball, knock it along the back four, whatever. We're 3-1 up, 2 minutes to half time, whatever it was, keep the ball, take this thing out of it. So that was error one for me, that we gave the ball away too cheaply from that position. You've then got the ball, it comes into the box, and then the little back heel is beautiful, but nobody's tracked the runner. I can't remember who it was, the Leeds player who pinged it across, but nobody's tracked them, and they're wide open in the box to receive that back heel, and then a little bit unfortunate with the way it's deflected up, but I thought, you know, once it's deflected up in that way, it's kind of anyone's. But to me, the issues were in the build up. I think that speaks to a wider issue in the game where, and Leeds will do this to you, but we're a bit too open and a bit too ambitious at times, where particularly when we're 3-1 up already, and I think we did try to do it a little bit when we came out in the second half, just tried to keep it a bit better, you know, tried to be a bit more patient in our build-up, which are all things that Gerrard has told us he wants to do, and I think there were times in that game where we should have done that better and not tried to play Leeds at their own game, where they're going to be better at that than us, you know, because it's their game. So I know, Omar, you don't necessarily agree, and you think you've got to go toe to toe with Leeds because it doesn't work if you try and take the sting out.
If you keep the ball,
you keep them at arm's length, you know.
I didn't mean that when we were talking about it before that you have to do it. I'm just saying it's the way that Leeds play. It almost makes you want to do it. And that goal, just quickly, I think the biggest mistake we made was that we were so deep. There was no. Yeah. If you look at where the player receives the ball, I think it's Click who gets the ball and then he back heels it. It's about 3 yards out from goal.
Yeah.
And it's not like a corner or anything like that. There's no reason for us to be that deep. There's no reason for us to be on our goal line. It makes no sense. And again, that was a frustrating thing for me. But I think, sorry, your point there about how Leeds play. I think, you know, we did try and do it. You're right. But Leeds do make it difficult for you. One with their press. But you know, if you are good ball players, then you can sort of pass it around them. Although I'm not sure we do have good ball players. You know, we've got like a mixed bag of midfield.
For half an hour we were doing it. Lovely.
Yeah, yeah. But I think the big thing for me is, and McGinn was, maybe it was a game plan or not, but you know, when Leeds do press, they leave massive gaps.
Yeah.
And they almost invite you to say, go play that ball. You know, go play over the top, or go play out wide, or drop it into the middle, because they do go man for man. That's just the way they play. They leave massive, massive gaps.
I don't have a problem with that. I think that was a sensible tactic and it worked really well. But you don't need to be doing that when you're 3-1 up with 2 minutes to go to half time. You know, at that point in the game, you take the sting out of it. You go in at 3-1. And then even if everything else that happened in the game had happened, I still think we'd have won that game. Even if Consor had got sent off, all of the rest of it, I don't think we'd have conceded two goals in the second half, because
they didn't really create much, did they? After that second goal, you know, they obviously scored the goal, but they didn't really do much apart from that. And
they were knackered,
yeah. And that's what annoyed me. I think we sort of threw it away.
We definitely threw it away. I mean, they've been poor this season. They're still missing two of their best players in Bamford and Phillips. And you know, what were they, six?
Like,
six,
they kicked our two best players off the park. Let's not forget. So that made it harder for us.
Oh yeah, but six from bottom, were they before the game? You know, they're not winning games. They've been struggling. They've been conceding goals.
But and, where do you put that down to then AJ? Because you know, I completely agree with you. You know, you score that third goal. You've got what, 10 minutes or 5 minutes left? I can't remember how many minutes were left when that third goal went in. Is it on the players or is it on the manager there to say, look, let's just think about what we're doing here. Let's not go too gung ho. Let's tuck the midfielders in, tuck the wide men in a little bit more. You know, Louise, McGinn sit together rather than just Louise by himself.
It's the manager for me.
Yeah.
Get a note on. Get a note.
I think it's both. Maybe. It's both. There's individual errors involved, isn't there? So you can't hold Gerrard responsible for that. But I do think, I mean, if you look at our last five games at home, we've conceded 11 goals. Now, in the mix there, you've got Chelsea, Man City and Man United. So you've got to take that into account. But we're averaging conceding less than a goal a game away from home. So it's clear that there's a slightly different approach at home than there is away. And you would expect that. Obviously, you want to be on the front foot more at home. And that's something you want to try and the ambition is to win all your games at home pretty much if we want to be where we want to be. But I do think the balance is currently not quite right. And you know, Luiz in those kinds of games is always going to struggle. We've talked about the games that he's good in, the games that he's poor in. Leeds is probably the worst possible game to have Douglas Luiz as your single defensive midfield player, because you know he's not good when he's getting stretched around the place. He doesn't cover enough ground. He's not strong enough to deal with their physicality, etc. I love him. He's got, you know, huge positive sides to his game, but he was poor, and it was exactly the kind of game that I'd expect him to be poor in. But if you're the manager, you know, if I can see that, then Steven Gerrard should be able to see that and should adjust the way we play accordingly, particularly at a point in a game when we're already 3-1 up. And actually, at that point, you probably do need to tighten things up a little bit and play in a slightly different way from perhaps what the original game plan was. So I don't think it's all on Gerrard by any means, because there were individual player mistakes in there. But I do think, you know, I agree with Sam, you've got to question some of the managerial decisions in there as well.
Mm. Sam, your thoughts on your favourite topic? One thing we haven't talked about was Ollie Watkins. Another poor performance, really, wasn't it?
I'll come to that now, but I just want to say I do agree with you, Omar, that, you know, Leeds are a bit of a pound shop Man City. Against Man City, we sat back, we covered the gaps. Against Leeds, we thought, we've got the minerals to go toe-to-toe. It didn't work out, but I can see why he did it. On Watkins, I'll say, look, you know, I think that last season he came into the side, he was a breath of fresh air, he was chasing lost causes, his press was excellent. He hit the post an awful lot of times. Carl would say that, you know, he would have got, 20 goals if he wasn't getting, you know, his toenail caught offside and things like that. And that's fair enough. But this season, he's looked a shadow of the player he was last year. And last night, he just didn't look like a goal threat at all. Against Everton, he wasn't a goal threat at all. And these are the sort of teams that, you know, we expect to go and, you know, we expect our strikers to get some chances. And I do take the point about service. All strikers rely on service to an extent, but at the moment, he just looks as though there's no goal coming. We've got some winnable games on the horizon. If we get through the next three games and he's not got a goal or an assist, I don't think that it's enough to come off after 90 minutes against a team from the middle of the table or lower and say, oh, I made that good run that created some space from Ramsey. I just think we need a bigger contribution from our nine. And I think he's in trouble at the moment. I would also say that it's not like we've got a player to come on from the bench who's, you know, looking hungry or champing at the bit or whatever, because Ings is having his own problems in terms of form. And I couldn't be a hypocrite after what I've said about Keenan Davis in the past not being up to Premier League standard, which I still believe. I'm not going to fall into the trap of saying let's get him back. I just think it's a case of, you know, we are going to be in the market for a new number nine in the summer. And until then, I just think whoever plays Ings or Watkins, I don't think it's going to happen for either of them. But it is a great shame what's happened to Ollie.
Mm. It's interesting. Yeah, it's, I don't know. It's Watkins yesterday, watching him, you know, if you look at his stats as well, you know, in terms of his pressing and his running, it's all very much the same as last year. You know, it's no different, and I'm sure AJ will sort of back me up on that. And even his chance conversion probably isn't that dissimilar, but he just doesn't seem to be getting in the right places or you know, making the right runs or being in the right position. There was a bit yesterday, a couple of times, where one when Coutinho megged the guy and came in and put a cross in, and he's sort of hanging on the edge of the box a little bit, whereas last year he'd be going front post or, you know, be getting in the box or getting on the 6-yard line. And I don't know, he just doesn't seem to be doing that. And, you know, he made a couple of good runs yesterday, and both Bundy and McGinn didn't manage to play him through. So, you know, that's not his fault. But again, you know, I think in the back of my head, you know, if he gets played through like Ramsey did in the current way he's playing and the current mood he's in, I'm not sure he scores both those goals. And that's a concern for me. And I don't think it's an ability thing. I think it's a mentality thing at the moment. And I don't know where his head's at. If it's, you know, obviously he has a new kid and all that kind of stuff. Maybe is that playing into it? I don't know. I've no idea. But he's a talented player. He's done so much for us. AJ, do you think his style suits playing with players like Bundy and Coutinho, or do you think you need a better footballer there, like a Suarez at his peak, or like a Ings at his peak, who can play those like nice little 1-2s and link up play? Do you think Watkins is more of a hustle and bustle type striker?
Yeah, obviously he's performing less well this season than he did last season, and I think if you look at a lot of his goals last season, they did come from sort of wide areas, from, you know, Grealish getting in behind and fast breaks and all that sort of stuff. I think he probably is better suited to that sort of game. But also, if you look back across the goals he scored for Villa, he has scored all kinds of goals, you know, headers, both feet, creating chances for himself, fox in the box type goals, etc. I suppose the one type of goal you don't see him score a lot is the approach that we're now most likely to score goals, which is running onto three balls. Like, you don't see that. But then we weren't creating chances in that way last season, so I suppose you can't really say that he can't do that, but we haven't seen him do it, and I suppose there's the opportunity to do that now. So it's not that I'm not worried about it, but I think we shouldn't have a short memory and forget, you know, he hasn't become a bad player overnight. The thing that worries me, and I hadn't even really thought about this until Carl mentioned it on the chat, you know, that he looks unhappy, and then, you know, when you look back at the replays, he didn't seem to celebrate very much when we scored the first goal. He didn't seem to join the other players. So I don't know. I mean, obviously there was the rumours of Arsenal. He's an Arsenal fan. You know, I think that the talk was Arsenal interested for 60 million. I don't think anyone would turn that down now. I think we'd have been disappointed if he'd have gone for that in the summer. But I don't think we'd turn it down now. Ings coming in, you know, maybe that's affected him, both in terms of the psychology of it, in the sense that, you know, we were all talking about the need for a Watkins backup. And let's face it, he's still first choice. But, you know, the fact that we went and signed Ings, a big high-profile signing in his position, maybe that's bothered him. I don't know. He's not at his best, but I would still say at the moment he's definitely our first choice and our best option in that position. And even when he's not scoring, he offers enough to the team to justify that over and above Ings for me. Now, if Ings gets a run and starts scoring goals, then that's a different equation. But at the moment, Ings hasn't been scoring or converting chances either. So, yeah, he's a bit off the boil, isn't he? And whether that's because he can't ever work in this type of system with the sort of players he's got behind him now, or whether it just hasn't worked so far, I don't know. But I think Sam's right in the sense that nobody's position is safe for me in the summer. You know, Martinez probably, I assume Luca Dean and Buendia, if we sign him permanently, then Coutinho as well. Other than that, maybe McGinn, just because managers seem to love him. But other than that, if we can strengthen, we will do it. So I don't think anyone's safe in the summer, and Watkins is not alone in being on the list of people that might get replaced.
Cool. Omar, are you picking Watkins or Ings on Sunday?
It's a tough one. It really is a tough one. I think I probably would give Ings a run out, to be honest.
I think,
as long as Coutinho and Bendia are fit, then I would give Ings
exactly,
a run out.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, I would give a run out. Right. If not, then obviously probably not. But I think against Newcastle, with Jonjo Shelvey there as a defensive midfielder, I don't know if they'll play Bruno Guimarães or not, but or however you say his name. His Portuguese probably don't say it like that, probably Guimarães or something like that, isn't it? But anyway,
I don't know, mate.
But yeah, if John Joe Shelby's there and you've got Bundy and Coutinho running around, then Ings I think is a good bet because you can get in and slot him in and you'll have plenty of opportunity to do so. But I think if not, then I'll probably go with Watkins. But you know, I guess we'll see. But maybe they'll both play if Bundy is injured.
I hope not. Yeah, I'd much rather see Tony or Bailey if he's fit.
I thought Carney was probably our best player second half, by the way. I don't know what you guys
thought.
I thought he was the only player to come out with any credit. It wasn't amazing, but at least he tried to get on the ball and make something happen. It was almost like I felt a little bit sorry for him because the players that were, you know, that he was trying to do the little one twos were ended up being players like that. You know, he went really. They're not like that's nice. If it was Buendia and Coutinho playing there, then you know you can probably make something happen. So I didn't think it was his fault that much, but at least he had the willingness to try and do something.
I thought he did well for the type of player he is, but we missed something when Buendia went off. When we didn't have the ball, and that's not a criticism of Carney, but he's not the sort of player that's going to be harrying everyone and chasing everything down. I agree. I thought he did well. When he came on.
Right, should we move on to next part of our show? It's time for
vital statistics, ladies. Yeah!
Vital statistics. Vital statistics. What will the stats say?
AJ.
Yeah.
Newcastle coming up. Come on then, let's depress me with some head-to-heads.
All time.
Go whatever you want, mate. Go all whatever. Time, I don't think it's good reading anyway, is it?
Well, I was surprised all time by how shit it was, and I feel like I say that every week. But I was surprised because in my head, over history, we're better than Newcastle, but apparently not. We've lost 71 games, we've won 58, and we've drawn 39. So they're miles ahead of us in terms of the head-to-head. In the Premier League era, it's no better, really. 11 wins for us, 23 losses and 17 draws. But on the positive side, we are unbeaten in our last five games against them. And if you want to look at the Premier League only, we're unbeaten in seven because our last defeat against them was when we were both in the Championship together. And we've only lost once in nine games. So the recent head-to-head is actually pretty good. But our last seven wins against Newcastle have all been at home. So you actually have to go all the way back to April 2005 to find our last win at St James's Park. And that was the famous game where they had three players sent off, one where Stephen Taylor handled on the line and became a great gif for him looking like he'd been shot by a sniper. The other two sendings off were Dyer and Bowyer fighting each other and having to be separated by Gareth Barry. So a kind of iconic game, but it's a long time since we've won at St James's Park. 13 games, in fact, on the spin where we have failed to win. There's quite a few draws in there, so it's not all defeats by any means.
We should have won last year, shouldn't we? Really,
we are due one.
Yeah. Was it Kieran Clark?
Right at the last minute, wasn't it? Was it Clark or Lascelles?
It's no good asking me, mate. Unless it's the 90s, as you know, then I won't remember. Even if it was only last year. But 13 games without a win at St James's Park. Who do you think are the big scorers in the Premier League era in the head-to-head? Who's got the most?
Shearer.
Obviously Shearer, with seven. Then you've got two other kind of famous Newcastle forwards on four and one Villa player on four.
Carew?
No, Carew's on three because he got a hat-trick, didn't he? So all in one game. So Carew's on three, but someone on four.
Les Ferdinand got a few against.
Yeah, Ferdinand's got four for them, yeah. A good friend of yours is the Villa player, mate. Friend of the pod.
Dwight York.
Yeah. And then a well-known, very attractive Newcastle player is the other one with four. Lucky man. Played for Liverpool as well.
David Ginola?
No. Peter Beardsley.
Oh.
So in terms of their current form, they are unbeaten in their last three. They've won their last two. Those were against Leeds and Everton, though, so teams in a sort of similar position to them. But keep in mind, they've still only got three wins all season. And before those last two wins, they hadn't won in six games. And as part of those six games, they lost to Cambridge United. So, you know, very much a mixed bag in terms of their form. They've conceded 44 goals this season. Only Norwich with 46 have conceded more. So they're still a side, despite all of our head-to-head record and the lack of wins at St James's Park and all of that, that on paper you would expect us to beat. But I guess we do need to keep in mind they're a different side now post the January transfer window. They've got Trippier in, who was exceptional the other night in their win the other night. Look, Wood is not brilliant, but he's scored against us for Burnley a few times, and he's better than any alternative option they had to Callum Wilson being injured beforehand. Obviously, Target has strengthened them, but he can't play against us, so that's good news. But San Maximan, still a huge threat for them with 5 goals and 3 assists so far this season. And you mentioned Guimarães, Omar. I don't know if he'll start. He didn't play against Everton in the last game. Well, he came on as a sub, but like time-wasting end of the game sub for the last minute or whatever. So I don't know if he's going to be ready to start. But if he does, I don't know a huge amount about him. But from what I've read, has the potential to be transformative in their midfield, which was a real area of weakness for them before. So he wouldn't have to be even that good to strengthen their midfield. So it's kind of a difficult game to judge in a way, because they've made so many signings that the form for the rest of the season is almost irrelevant in a way. I'd kind of still hope and expect that we'll go there and get a win, but that's certainly less likely than it would have been before January.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think I said to the lads before the game yesterday, I said I'd take 4 points for the next two games, and I still would, but I think that 3 points from Newcastle is going to be that much harder now. They seem to be, the fans are up for it. I think that's a massive factor, as you say, and obviously that win recently as well. It's just a completely different Newcastle side. So I think it's going to be tough. I'll be interested to see how we line up. I imagine we'll probably go similar again, and maybe Chambers comes in for Konsa. I can't see you making too many of the changes, and apart from that, obviously, it's injuries. I'd like to see a maybe stronger bench and maybe try and get a Bailey and Traore on there on that bench if we can as well, just because I didn't seem like we had anyone who could impact the game yesterday, apart from Mings, and he didn't get a chance to come on. So, yeah, I mean, well, Sam's got to go in a bit, I think, so let's push on to Villa Vault. But before we do that, let's quickly get your prediction. So, Sam, your prediction?
It's going to be a tough game. They're well up for it. We'll probably... I think if we play Ings and if Buendia and Coutinho are fit, I think we'll create plenty, and hopefully we'll have the finishing. So, caveat that we go with that side, I think we'll win 2-1.
AJ?
I was going to say 2-1 as well. I just... This might be a bit left field, but especially with Konsa out suspended... but given how poor Luiz was, I wonder if there's a case for Howes comes in for Konsa and Chambers plays in ahead of Luiz in midfield, just to give us that extra bit of bite in there away from home. By all accounts, he was the best player in a very poor Fulham side playing in that role when he went to Fulham. So I think there's maybe a case for that, but I don't think that will happen. I think Chambers, as Sam says, will come in at centre-half, and otherwise, if everyone's fit, we'll be unchanged. But yeah, I agree, it'd be great to have a slightly stronger bench than we've had in recent games as well. But yeah, I was going to say 2-1 as well. I do think it could easily go either way, but I'd like to think, despite their improvements, we've still got enough to win the game.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I think we've almost got to win this game now. You know, if we want to do something this season and try and finish top half, that's the kind of game we have to win. Yeah. I thought yesterday was like a must not lose, because obviously Leeds weren't that far behind us. And we want to keep sort of touching distance with those ahead of us. And I've seen Wolves lost today as well. So, you know, they're 7 points ahead of us. You know, they're still, we can still catch him up if we have a good run of games. And these are potentially a good run of games. Although, as Chadsey told me yesterday, there's no such thing as a good run of games in the Premier League. So, you know, don't get too hyped about it. But we have to do well in these games. You know, we're going to pretty much have a fully fit squad now going forward. So, unless obviously Brendan is injured, but I think hopefully he was touch and go, Gerrard said. So we'll see. But, you know, we're going to have the players there. We've got Coutinho on our team, and we've seen what he can do. If we can't win these games with these types of players on our team, then I worry about us really moving forward, you know, and the amount of players that are going to be turned over the summer as well. So, yeah, I'm going to go for a really long way about saying it, but I think I'm going to go for a 2-1 winner as well.
Oh, wow, consistent. Yeah. Also 2-1.
Yeah, I was going to say 2-1 anyway, so I was surprised what you
we'll
both
see what
for.
We know. We'll see what we all know, haven't we?
Well, Sam's pissed off, so I don't know if we're going to do Villa well, unless you fancy doing it by yourself.
Go on. Let's see what happens. Have you got one?
Pick, tell you what. Pick a random year, and we'll do it from there. Obviously, a year that they're Newcastle.
Oh, let's go 90s, seeing as it's me on my own.
Yeah, all right. How about 96?
Let's go... yeah, all right, 96. That's all right.
Yeah. Okay. Let's have a look.
I'll probably be terrible now that I've said that.
All right, what a game. This is a great game. So, I remember this game. This is a game that was featured on the pod as one of the... the ending credits of the Dwight York pod, and also in the trailer for the Dwight York pod as well. So it was 1996, as we mentioned, September 1996, Newcastle at home against Villa. What was the score? High scoring game. That's your clue.
Oh, it was a 4-3, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
4-3. Dwight York hat trick.
Dwight York hat trick.
That would be why it was on. That was why. Could you not have picked? He had other hat tricks, didn't he? Why did you pick that one? Could you not have picked a hat trick where we won the game or something?
No, it was just because that was the clips. What about I found. The one? That was the clips I found on YouTube.
Oh, laziness, basically. Laziness, that's what it comes down to. It was what about when he panienka'd Dave Seaman? That'd have been a good one to
remember. Yeah, I did try and find that, but yeah. Yeah, I was trying to learn video editing at the same time, so it was all brand new to me. So I'm afraid that's what you got. All right,
well, you did a good job, mate. I thought.
Thank you, mate. Who scored for Newcastle then?
Who scored for Newcastle?
Again, you should get these.
Well, let's say Shearer because he's bound to have scored, isn't he?
Yeah.
In the 90s. Ginola?
No. Another striker you mentioned earlier.
Oh, we mentioned him already. Serlez.
Serlez got two.
He did get two. He got a brace.
Yeah, Shearer got one. I don't know if you'll get this one. Famous Geordie. I think he's Geordie. Played for them in the 90s. He used to play either centre-back or defensive midfield, but I think he played centre-back mainly.
Did he play for us?
No.
Oh, I was thinking Steve Watson.
Steve something.
Steve Howie.
Howie, yep. Yep, bang on.
Howie
the lads.
yeah.
This is a random question. You might get this. Which school teacher referee was refereeing? I said school teacher referee because he reminded me of a school teacher when he refed.
He reminded you of one, or he was one?
Yeah. I think he might have been one. Yeah, I think he was one, actually.
David Ellery was one, wasn't he?
Yeah, that's it.
I think he was a teacher. Yeah. Ellery? Oh, mate, I'm smashing this.
Yo, 90s, mate. You love 90s.
All right. To be fair, it's a fairly iconic game. Remember that David Ellery refereed it, but yeah.
All right, let's have a look. Let's see some... all right, so Newcastle have two players who've played for both teams playing in that game.
Well, Steve Watson is one for sure.
Yeah, Steve Watson, yeah, yeah.
Well, and Ginola. Ginola, however we want to say it.
Let's name the Villa team then. Who's in goal?
Bosnich?
Nope.
No, Oakes then.
Oakes, yeah. And the back five.
Barry, or is it too soon for Barry?
I think he made his debut that year, but he didn't play.
Okay, well,
oh, no, made his debut year after. Sorry,
McGrath.
Nope, he just left.
Southgate.
Southgate, yeah.
Ehiog.
Yeah.
Schumacher.
Nope.
No, who else would have been in that team?
Famous left back.
Steve Staunton.
Yeah, another famous left back.
Another one. Alan Wright.
Yep, and then our Portuguese right back.
Fernando Nelson.
Yeah.
Up front, well, obviously York. Atkinson. Did Atkinson play?
Yeah.
Too late for him?
No. York, and obviously York's partner.
Savo,
yeah. And then midfield three. Have you got midfield? Sorry, I lost you for a minute there. Midfield three?
No, I haven't done the midfield. Ian Taylor.
Yep.
Mark Draper.
Yep.
Oh, third
one.
I'm
not sure if you get third one. He didn't really light it up for Villa. We thought he would, but he didn't. We spent about 5 or 6 million on him, and we thought he was going to be a massive player for us.
Where from?
He was.
Steve Stone.
Where from?
Serbia. Oh, Sam's back.
Churchich.
No, Serbian. Oh, Kurcic. Yeah. Oh, there was a really annoying lad. He was a grown man in front of us who, at that time, remember, we got linked to Paul Gascoigne?
Yeah.
And Kurcic was playing, and this bloke stood up and he shouted to Kurcic, "Come on, Sasa! Who needs Paul Gascoigne?" Yeah, okay, mate. Yeah.
Cheers, mate.
Sasa Kurcic. Yeah, I'd rather have him than Paul Gascoigne. Even at that point where Gazza was, you know, fat and past his best, I'd still rather have had him than Sasa Kurcic. Well, I've done all right there, haven't I?
Right, yeah. You've done really, really well. 90s is definitely your vibe, mate. Definitely your vibe. Obviously an iconic game as well.
It was
a
big game. It was a big game.
Big game, yeah. Yeah. Good. Yeah, good. Good. Let's hope it's not 4-3.
Was there a sending off in that
Sunday
game? Or have I remembered that wrong?
There was. Yeah. Was it Shearer got sent off? Was that not the game Shearer got sent off? No, Mark Draper got sent off. Shearer. I remember Shearer was another game. It was maybe a year or 2 years later when he went up for a header and the referee, it was a Ryan Rennie, I think, sent him off, and Ian Taylor did the old couldn't believe it. Like, why have you sent him off? He didn't do anything. Anyway. But that's it. That's it for this week, lads. Thank you for your time. As always, good to be back. Shame we're not back on the back of a win, but still an entertaining game nonetheless, and some positives there to take out, but also plenty of areas to improve. We'll be back, obviously, after the game on Sunday, probably next week on Thursday again with the lads. Hopefully, I'll have a full roster for you guys. But thank you for listening. Thank you for all your interactions while we've been away, and please do subscribe and follow us if you haven't already on whatever podcast platform you're on. Follow us on Twitter at Villa Podcast, all one word. The pod is sponsored by Mibe Digital, once again, a local Birmingham based company. Do check them out if you've got any digital marketing needs. And apart from that, look forward to speaking to you next week, guys. And up the Villa.
Up the Villa.
I love it. Mainu bahut changa lagda.